Hello everyone, welcome to the third episode of the DCU Invent podcast series. Now for something a bit different. From the previous episodes you may note that I've been speaking with DCU researchers about large-scale research initiatives and centres of excellence within the university. Today I'm joined by Aidan Boren to talk about his spin-out from DCU. So welcome Aidan. We might get started with you telling us a little bit about yourself and then we might move on to how you came up with the idea for your spin-out.
Thanks, Sean. It's great to have this opportunity to chat to you. So my background, I'm the founder and CEO of this spin-out, which we call Digital Gate Labs. And within Digital Gate Labs, we've created a first-to-market solution, which we call Gatekeeper. And Gatekeeper delivers digital gate as a service. And this is to be used by clinicians to carry out gait assessments in a variety of locations, times and places. My background, just to kick that off, I'm an engineer initially. By my primary degree was in microelectronics and computer engineering at Trinity College. Completed that in 1988. And those of you who are listening will realize that there probably weren't a whole lot of computers. Certainly the personal computing environment was really only beginning to take off then. But having said all of that, over my career, I think I've developed a very unique set of experiences in both industry and academia, as well as in a mixture of startup and corporate environments. So, but my superpower, if I have such a thing, is that I continue to be, after 30 years, I continue to be deeply technical. I guess I'll always be an engineer. And what I like to do basically is to break things and then try and fix them. And that really informed, you know, a lot of my career along the way. I've spent most of my career in software and systems development within the telecommunications industry, worked for some brilliant companies, worked for Motorola in Chicago in the US doing analog, and then moved on to their GSM switching development. Also spent time in a startup in Ireland called Aldiscon, who did the first short message service center. And probably then the longest chunk of my career, nearly 20 years, was in Lucent. So Lucent Technologies, formerly AT&T, and did a mixture of GSM, 3G and 4G development within that. In 2004, then Lucent set up a Bell Labs research center in Dublin. And that really gave me the opportunity to do something that I wanted to do, which is actually go back and I don't want to say retrain, but do a PhD in machine learning and artificial intelligence and what was developing around that time. And my area of expertise then really focused on what was emerging sensor networks, or web of things, as it was called at the time, became IoT and then edge IoT. And really my focus has always been on how to use these technologies to understand human behavior. So that's perhaps sounds a little bit sinister, but really what we were trying to do, or I became obsessed with, was actually understanding what was going on with the person and maybe between people in a contactless way. That really drove me towards looking, so not using sensors or not using wearables per se, but looking at kind of the ambient signals that are around us. So video and audio obviously are one, looking and mapping the magnetic fields and EMF and Wi-Fi signals, and using that sort of background noise, let's call it, to understand what people are doing. And it was fundamentally in that space that the idea for Gatekeeper came along, in terms of looking, what's the, you know, easiest way to understand what a human person is doing in terms of maybe their their pose, how they're moving, what actions or activities they're doing. And that opened up the idea that of using video, short videos of people doing essentially predefined tasks, and we process those using whatever technologies were current to infer or learn some behavior. So in some ways, I've been doing the same piece of research for 30 years, just applying different technologies to it. But I think I finally arrived most recently on a very sweet spot in terms of where the technology, and particularly deep learning, can deliver something really substantial into the healthcare domain. And that's where I've been focused on. In terms of DCU, so DCU is really, really interesting and useful program in DCU, which really helped take the very high level idea and some prototypes. I had two things. I had kind of had a high level idea, and then I had the engineer's prototype that I built a, you know, an NVIDIA Jetson powered a demonstrator that did some low level analysis of video, brought that into DCU, and spun in the idea into DCU in 2019. And DCU is really interesting because what it allowed me to gain access to was, well, first of all, an array of talent, particularly in insight. Very appreciative to Professor Noel O'Connor for all of the support he gave me along the way, directing and helping out. Access to the motion capture lab. So products like Vicon and Gate-Right would be outside the scope of what a startup company could legitimately, you know, have access to. With DCU, that was maybe not quite as straightforward as booking a form, but we were able to do that and do significant evaluations on our technology. So where we are today is that coming up to actually, I think today is the shortest day of the year in 2021, where
Is.
Gatekeeper is a CE marked class one medical device. We believe we're first to market with what we call gate analysis of a service. And basically, it's doing objective analysis of gait is really the science of how you walk. And it's influenced by your gait is influenced by your cognitive, physical, and emotional state. So it's really a biomarker for significant underlying health and well-being issues. And it's got many applications and heavily used already, albeit in a manual or observational way in healthcare.
So, Aidan, you had an idea, you had your basic prototype, then you came to DCU about coming to DCU to develop it further with Insight. So, I suppose the first thing I might ask is you have something now that's a CE mark Class 1 medical device. So, you just might unpack what that means and the relevance of it, of course.
Yeah, no problem. So this is a very probably understood, let's say, area, because fundamentally what we built, although we call it a medical device, there's no device. The device is the user's mobile phone. The medical device is actually the software, and therein lies the challenge. How do you certify a medical device that's purely software? And both at the EU level as well as with the regulatory authority in Ireland are, you know, provide excellent support for startups to figure that out. But fundamentally, what that means basically is that there are a set of requirements on both how you develop, how you evaluate, and how you deploy the technology. So, when you're doing anything with human healthcare, obviously the safety, the do no harm aspect is very, very important. So, you need to be able to show that you've developed your product or service in such a way that, at a minimum, that you're not going to do any harm. Fundamentally, then, in terms of if you're making any sort of claims about what your technology does, then they need to be backed up with a proper clinical evaluation. There are a bunch of standards out there about how to do that and how they're evaluated and how to report on them statistically. So when I talk about CE marked and the Class One medical device, that's really the culmination of all of those processes that give you a quality management system for developing, testing, and deploying your solution. So it's a long journey, but it's a necessary one in order to interact with the healthcare services.
So you might, if you're speaking about it being clinically validated, so you're in the clinic, so you might maybe just outline, how does this get used by whom in practice? And when you say the clinic, maybe just to be curious about, was that in the hospital or whatever?
Yeah, no problem. It probably by way of leading in just very slightly. So the fundamentally what we're the problem we're solving with Gatekeeper centers around the over 65 population. And if you study the over 65 population, some of the facts are kind of eye-watering. They're For example, in Ireland, there are about 700,000 people over the age of 65. And although lifespan has been increasing, where everybody's living longer, health span or the quality of life, maybe towards the end of that lifespan, is not really necessarily kept shape. And that lifespan and health span balance really comes out in the figures when you actually look at the monetary and costing figures. So, for example, the over 65s really account for 40% of the total healthcare budget in Ireland, and that's mapped in across all of the developed healthcare countries with kind of modern healthcare systems. And if you look behind that and say that, well, of these 700,000 people, the research is there that tells us that there are about 125,000 of those are living with the impacts of multiple chronic conditions. And this is the group that are kind of the people who are let's say suffering most in terms of the access and treatment and so on. And I suppose the good news is that from a clinical point of view, there's a clinical measurement called frailty measurement. And that really allows you to classify this grouping, this big grouping of people into three categories. And based on those categories, you can decide who's on a frailty scale, what the appropriate treatment and where it would be. And I think probably the most important aspect of it is that with these people are not necessarily centered in the acute system. They're spread out across. Some of them are living at home. Some of them are in, interacting with primary care. Some of them are in acute centers. So whatever technology you come up with, you need to be able to cover all of those institutions, and the technology needs to follow the patient, not the other way around. So with Gatekeeper, fundamentally speaking, we're this first to market solution. And what we've done is allow the healthcare services to find, first of all, these 125,000 people who are living with the impacts of multiple conditions, and then manage and monitor these. So we like to think of Gatekeeper as a thermometer for frailty, in that it classifies or provides a screen that puts you into one of three categories. And what our financial model tells us that if we find for every time we identify somebody who's in maybe the frail category, that there are significant savings to be made in bed days, emergency department visits, home healthcare resources that would be expended. And again, there's a really important aspect which falls out of this is that, and it's probably the single thing, most valuable piece of thing information I've learned over the last few years is that we started very early. We worked with Talley University Hospital and the National Rehabilitation Hospital, since 2019. And the reason for that really was to help us understand how to integrate this into the healthcare services. There would be no point in rocking up with some solution that you've developed. And to put it crudely, you know, Gatekeeper really finds the cohort of patients that current healthcare solutions and services can actually fix. So we're kind of the, you know, we find them and you fix them is, and the benefit of that really is that it's easy to understand, but it's also been made the implementation and where we insert into the healthcare system kind of easier to implement and scale. And, you know, this understanding is as important, I would say, as understanding the technology that we do ourselves, and in that the collaborative work we did, working hand in glove with the both with teaching hospitals as well as the people delivering the services, the end users. So fundamentally, you know, my advice to anyone, my advice to myself in 2019 would have been probably to start in 2017, writing down exactly what the use case was back then.
So you have ultimately a software-based tool for clinicians with patients over 65 to measure frailty and gait as a marker of, you know, patient stratification and how to treat them better. So once you say software and HSC in the same sentence, many people will be going, well, it doesn't sound like that the HSC and the hospitals at least uniformly have great ICT capabilities. So how did you manage with that, or perhaps even go around that particular issue?
Yeah, so it's a very challenging area. So patient data and particularly what we were doing, kind of fundamentally, we were recording a video of the patient. So from the ground up, security, encryption and privacy are a kind of fundamental pillars of the technology. And, you know, using the GDPR terminology, protecting what your data when it's at rest as well as when it's moving is fundamentally how you do that. Having said all of that, one, our solution is something at the moment that's centered or housed within the acute hospital system. So it kind of essentially sits behind the firewall of the acute system and gets shared out to various you know, primary care, community-based institutions based on the rules and regs that those guys have. So they essentially control the data within the software and services. But, you know, over and above that, it's really about getting the sweet spot between making the technology available across different locations without exposing kind of any risk, frankly, to. And I think there are technologies, you know, that have been well established and that are, you know, more or less off the shelf. It's kind of good hygiene, let's say, for how you architect the system. And again, my background in the telecoms network, whatever you think about telecoms, you know, the reliability and the availability statistics for telecoms networks are very, very high. If you know, during the recent storm Barra, for example, your mobile phone service stayed up if your electricity was down, more or less. So, you know, a lot of my engineering nuance and the way I design things is kind of seeded by you know, by that sort of thinking.
So you have a resilient product that's CE marked, which deals with a lot of the issues around, you know, how it will be used in practice and clinically validating it. You adhere to GDPR encryption and so on. So now you have the technical side of things developed to a very high standard. So we might switch tack. I mean, when you have something that's developed, you have to build the team around it and you have to come up with your business plan and you have to get that funded. So we might dig into your spin out itself maybe discuss, if you wouldn't mind, to the, what key people you wanted to build your team around, including your good self as CEO, and how things are going with respect to, how much money do you need to get to where, as the investors are no doubt asking you.
I think I mentioned a couple of times along the way, I'm an engineer, at heart. My desk is full of half completed sensor projects and all sorts of weird and wonderful stuff here on my desk in front of me. And when somebody like me rocks up to part of what the venture capital and seed capital guys are doing is actually measuring the cut of the team's jib ever before they get to trying to understand the technology or the business per se. So, and it so it was important for me to bring on board people with proven business and healthcare experts. And I think we've done that. We've done that by engaging again very, very early, by cajoling, by arm twisting, and by incentivizing along the way. So now we have a really strong team of ex healthcare professionals, a major acute hospital former CEO. We've got a former healthcare services company CEO who are actually doing the business development. And the other aspect then is to understand fundamentally whether you're a clinical healthcare company or whether you're a digital or technology company, and or whether you're some hybrid of the two. And one of the most useful things we've done, which again I mentioned earlier, was to engage very, very early with the users. So looking up and down the supply chain of where you think you're going to insert your product. So, so our users are in the acute centers and in primary care and GPs. So we've engaged with people along that. But maybe in terms of sales and marketing as a startup, maybe we will use, other healthcare providers as the sales and marketing channel for us. So we've been engaging with those guys all along as well. So you need to look up and down the food chain. So our team, we've developed this team with a really nice mix of clinical expertise, technical expertise, as well as business development and business as well. And where we're at the moment is we're out talking to VCs and seed and angel investors, and we're looking to raise money to take the pilot work that we've done in Tala and one other acute center, and actually scale that initially into the other acute centers in Ireland, and then look at the UK and the EU market. So we're looking to raise in the region of 1 million euros to fund that development over a 3-year period, and the vast bulk of that goes on actually scaling out the the business development side, as well as developing extra features. The feedback we've had from both clinicians and the seed and VC people who've spoken to has been phenomenal, and the use case, we focused on a particular use case in frailty. There are a pipeline of at least a half a dozen other human healthcare ones. We also have structured our platform, potentially to be able to look at non-human gait analysis, so maybe in equine or bovine and so on, and big opportunities potentially there down the road. But our focus right now is human healthcare, and we'll be focused on that in terms of growth and so on.
So you're speaking to investors, with COVID and so on, has, in your mind, well, getting a sense from speaking to investors, are they investing?
So I think all of the So one I kind of mentioned it already that I think one of the things that COVID has done is actually stop the kind of face to face. So maybe what could be done better over in a face to face meeting in a couple of hours can take multiple iterations with slides and so on and so forth. And so I think that has actually disrupted the flow. It's a lot more difficult to talk the nitty-gritty of business over a Zoom session rather than in person, with the person and understanding the kind of dynamic of people and so on. And it can be hard to, whatever your personality is, to actually make that come across properly on Zoom as well. So having said all of that, I believe that there is significant investment happening, and that there's a lot of pent up demand in both, at the VC and in business. And I think once, fingers crossed, once we begin to see and understand the strategy to manage and live with COVID, then I think that will make itself clear.
So at the moment, is Gatekeeper a sales ready product? If one of the hospitals called up, or indeed a healthcare system globally called up and said, we need an instantiation of Gatekeeper in our system, could you fulfill that order?
Yes, absolutely. So we're, as I mentioned, we're already installed in pilots in two of the major hospitals in Dublin. And we're also doing, or have an install already with a much smaller startup company in the sports fitness area in Ireland. And there's one or two other customers that we're trying to spin up to evaluate. So we're essentially ready to go. Product and certification allows us to sign on customers whenever they're ready and whenever they're capable of looking at it.
No, that's fantastic. So look, for all those people who are in a space, whether that be wellness or physio or sports or indeed the hospital system, there will be contact details, including a link to the website, the Gatekeeper website, associated with this episode. And also, look, if you're an investor as well, I assume please use the contact details that we put in there. But otherwise, Aidan, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much for a quick tour of where Gatekeeper came from, and indeed, more importantly, where it might be going to. So thank you very much, Aidan.
Thank you, Sean. I've really enjoyed that. And just to say that in Digital Gate Labs, we're looking forward to 2022 when we actually begin to build some scale. We've got a great team around us, supported by Enterprise Ireland, and continuing our innovation links with DCU. So all in all, I think we're well set up for 2022.
Fabulous. Okay. Thank you, Aidan. And bye-bye, everybody.